Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Heart to Heart Podcast. I'm Bria.
And I'm Kim.
And today we have another great episode for you all about the male gaze.
Oof, this is a big topic, and I'm really, really excited for us to dive into this and really talk about the implications of the male gaze. What are the impacts on women? How does this affect media? How does this affect our own personal self-perceptions? We're going to dive into all of it. But before we do that, as always, know that you can listen to us on Anchor, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, and you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Yes, thank you so much for the great intro, as always. Let's get into it.
Ooh, so I think before we talk about the implications of the male gaze, we should define what the male gaze is. And so we'll link every quotation and all the sources that we're citing from, but essentially one article defines the male gaze as something that invokes the sexual politics of the gaze and suggests a sexualized way of looking that empowers men and objectifies women. So in the male gaze, the woman is visually positioned as an object of heterosexual male desire. And some examples that we commonly see to really, I think, put this into full perspective are, in movies when there's slow camera pans on women's bodies, or women are wearing like tight clothing while male characters are, dressed in like a full suit and, not sexualized at all. Mm-hmm. So it really is over-sexualization of women. And a lot of times in those scenes, like they're positioned in direct proximity to a man.
Yeah.
And so that invokes a certain kind of, I think, perspective that we're going to explore.
Yeah. It's just very interesting. Like, I think the first half of this will probably focus more on media and, what we see in media and how that then reflects back to us in real life. But it's so interesting to see, like, when it's men behind the camera, as directors, or it's men writing the scripts, or it's men then, giving orders to the costume department in terms of like how the women need to look so the women don't look boring or the women look interesting or desirable. And then the men just get to be in, black suits or button downs or whatever. It's like, you just see how they feel women can just be like clay molded to their desires and project all of their things onto women as if they're just empty vessels and not fully functioning people and, right. Or in media, fully functioning characters with other things and other backstories besides their looks.
Absolutely. And I think such a prominent example of this is in like so many like hip hop and rap music videos. Like I think this is such a glaring example where you have like the quintessential scene of like 50 women surrounded by like the one rapper, right? Like the cars in the background, the women are dressed like, in minimal clothing. Oftentimes they're like dancing or twerking. Like I feel like that's another common scene that's found. And so the question really is like, who is this for, right? Like who is supposed to benefit from this? And I think that's a scene that we often see in a lot of like music videos for like male rappers. But then also I think about for female rappers, like we've kind of discussed this before, how there is this perception that that can also be seen as like women empowerment and women trying to like reclaim their time. But at the same time, I think when you have these like historical perceptions and notions of the male gaze, you have to kind of ask the question, like, is this really women empowerment when women want to do this or like recreate these scenes?
Yeah.
Like, what is it really doing? Is it actually bringing us liberation if the male gaze is kind of at the crux of why we are favoring these kind of scenes in the first place?
Yeah. I think we talked about this a little before too, and that was a great episode, but just like, is it liberation if at the end of the day, men still win? Because if you own your sexuality and you do choose to dress in whatever fashion you want, if that fashion happens to be minimal, men still win because they're still going to view that and project their own creepy desires onto you despite you walking in your truth. So I think it's just like a matter of you literally doing what you want to do despite how men are going to benefit from it.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect way to view it. And just kind of this recognition, right, that like the male gaze really does govern the media and the formations of the media, right? Like you have music videos, but then even in movies and everything like that, like even in so many different like sex scenes in movies, like it's always a woman who is the most exposed, right? Mm-hmm.
No one ever wants to focus on the man. And that's why I think there's such a big step, like or a big change happening, where they're trying to get more female directors and female writers in things so the perspective can shift. Mm-hmm. Like you realize everything is catered to 50% of the population, but it's like, what about the other 50% who's watching and taking these things in?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Why are they never represented? Why are maybe their desires never received?
Mm-hmm. And I honestly feel like one interesting place where I'm like, I think that shift is starting to like be seen was like Insecure. Like I felt like the different scenes that were portrayed had a more equal like pairing than I think other films or like music videos or like mm-hmm. TV shows I've seen. Mm-hmm. So I think those shifts are starting to come. And obviously I think that makes sense because you have Issa Rae who
exactly.
is guiding that work, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a really big example, I think, of it really shifting. Because that show was really, like, her perspective, a Black woman's perspective. And, like, she really made sure, like, in any of those scenes, it was going to be focused on Nathan or it's going to be focused on Daniel or whatever, whatever. Like, it wasn't really focused on her. Mm-mm. Because that's not what she would want to see.
Right.
So, yeah. It's just, you see how systemic sexism
mm-hmm.
really impacts everything we consume.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it really feeds into these larger issues concerning the patriarchy, right? And male domination. Like, if the influence of the male gaze is going to be so predominant that even like women are doing it as well. And like,
yes.
You know what I mean? Then yes. I think that's when it's like, you know, that it's so pervasive. And that's where it's like, how do you come back from this? And kind of like, how do you reverse the narrative? This is, I think, the larger question that I'm kind of grappling with here. Like, how do you claim sexual liberation without feeding into the male gaze? Something I don't know how to do.
It's almost not that you have to be like, ignorance is bliss, but you kind mm-hmm. of have to ignore the male gaze if you want to feel liberated from it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that's like almost impossible to do. Because it's going to be there, but it's just kind of like, at some point, you have to take your individual power back.
Absolutely.
Even though it is obviously a systemic issue, it's like, you have to walk in your individual power and just be like, hey man, if I want to dress completely covered up or show skin, you know, either way, the male gaze is going to be affecting you that day. So it's kind of just like, I'm going to do what I want to do and not let it be governed by any man's ideals.
I love that. And I think also too, like in part of this episode and part of what we wanted to share was also like the implications on ourselves and our own self-perception from the male gaze.
Yeah.
So I also think that that's a really critical point to keep in mind when we think about how do we not let the male gaze and the objectification of Black women feed into insecurities of ourselves, right? Or like make us feel like we have to dress a certain way or that like our body has to look a certain way.
Yes.
Like in the media, obviously there's certain body types that are revered and we know these like consistently change literally like every 2 to 5 years.
Yep.
It's a different kind of body type. It's a different kind of like clothing style or how you wear this or that. And so I think in thinking about the male gaze, one important thing is like, how do you not let that dictate how you feel about yourself and what you love about yourself if that's being what's revered across all forms of media?
Right. I think I was just talking about this with someone, but like, kind of just talking about maybe like, you know, our new, just how much we're changing. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, what are we going to look like in even 6 months or a year or 2 years? And like, you know, my friend was just kind of saying like, this is someone who is so creative and like loves changing her hair and like wearing wigs and like just slays every style that she does. Shout out Janice. Mm-hmm. But she was just like talking to me and she was just kind of like, you know, like, what would be the implications of me, you know, not wearing wigs and just rocking like my shaved head? And like, what if I dyed it a crazy color and I just like stopped giving an F and I just did me? And you know what I mean? Like, what if that's a little more alternative than like what people are used to, whatever, whatever. And it's like, how would that affect me with the male gaze? You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And it's just kind of like crazy how much style, certain hairstyles, certain outfits, so many things, certain piercings, tattoo placements, like those things could be meticulously picked apart by the male gaze.
Absolutely.
Some people don't get things because they still want to be seen as dainty or this, this, this. Some people, you know, may feel pressured to have their hair straight, or if it's curly, it has to be a certain curl, or it has to be gelled back in this. And it's all because I want the male gaze to view me like this, view me like a lady. I want this to give me respect. And it's like, what if we all just blew those notions out the water?
Right.
And did whatever we felt personally called to do.
I think we'd be in a lot better place, right? And I think that is like the step towards liberation.
Yeah.
And I think just underscoring for anyone who wants a little bit more context or wants us to kind of connect the dots between how the male gaze is impacting women's self-perception, just one quote that I really, really love from this article. It says, "Naturally, the influence of the male gaze seeps into female self-perception and self-esteem. It's as much about the impact of seeing other women relegated to these supporting roles as it is about the way women are conditioned to fill them in real life. The pressure to conform to this patriarchal view, or to simply accept it or humor it, and endure being seen in this way, shapes how women think about their own bodies, capabilities, and place in the world, and that of other women."
Wow.
And I think that last part too, "and that of other women," is also significant, right? Because it's like, if the male gaze is governing and dictating your how you see yourself and what you think you have to do, and then you project that onto other women,
right?
That's also then it becomes an issue of why people can project their insecurities onto other people.
Right.
And how we hurt each other, women to women.
It's just like this episode and this conversation is really just making me further bridge the dots between how patriarchy works and how white supremacy works.
Oof.
And how both of those systems are, I don't know the word, not even paralleled, but like coupled at least.
Inextricably linked.
Yes.
Yeah.
Inextricably linked. And how they operate with the same mannerisms and the same vehicles. Like both of these systems, the patriarchy and white supremacy, like they oppress in a way that like makes you love your shackles. Mm. And they oppress in a way that like it's so mentally and like psychologically insidious that you start to believe the rhetoric of Absolutely. The oppressor, and you, they don't like the men in control don't even have to do the work anymore, right, because the women who are affected are upholding these barriers on themselves and other women. Black people do the same exact thing. So then think of the link of how Black women are affected in all of this.
Yeah. Because there is so much internalized racism, right? Within the Black community. And that's why we have colorism, right? Like that's, and we've discussed that in previous episodes.
Black people police colorism and they uphold colorism. That's why it doesn't die out.
Right. Uphold anyone's proximity to whiteness, right?
Yeah.
For anyone who's not sure what colorism is, it's like really the foundational notion that like it's Black people favoring people, other Black people who have a closer proximity to whiteness, right?
Yep.
So your lighter skin is preferred, you're seen as more desirable. And that literally is also a systemic like impact, right? Like that literally governs so many relationships and how people move and operate throughout the world. And for women, there's internalized sexism as well.
Mm-hmm.
Part of, as a result of the male gaze. And you're right. So now what does that look like for Black women? For having to grapple with both of those things, or even just, even if you don't believe that yourself, right? Like you're not following those notions or perspectives, but how people are treating you.
Yeah.
They're coming at you with some internalized racism and some internalized sexism.
Yeah.
What is that doing for you then at that point? Right? Like, and then how's that going to make you question yourself? And that's why I think it's so interesting what you said about how the people who create these structures, right? The systems that create the structure, after a certain point, they got their hands off the game, right?
Their hands are clean. They could sit back and look and be like, damn, why y'all fighting?
Right. Because now you've made other people the drivers,
and you reward people for like upholding those.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're the good Black because you, get them, get those other ones in order. Good job.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think this has become so evident in, like, I don't know, just I think across the Black community and, like, you know, how generationally people look at what you wear. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just like all those things, even respectability politics, I think directly bleeds into that. And we know, like, respectability politics is such a big issue in the Black community, right? Where it's like what you wear or not wear, people see as, like, you know, what you're worthy of as a Black person. Or people think that, like, if you dress in a certain way or, you know, wear your hair in a certain way, you're not deserving of, like, the same equality or access that, like, other Black people are given, right? Yeah. It's like gatekeeping. It's a form of gatekeeping. It's a form of exclusion. And like you said, it's, you know, people continuing to uphold these structures, right?
Yeah. And then also think of, like, the added layer of being a Black woman, maybe trying to partake in respectability politics, and then think of the added layer, what you have to do to make yourself feminine. Mm-hmm. And how Black, inherently throughout society and throughout history, Blackness has always been seen as a masculine identity characteristic.
Absolutely.
So Black women then have to go an extra mile if they wanted to, you know, try to uphold themselves within the male gaze to make themselves feminine and the perfect image of a woman. And then coupling that with respectability, it's like, I feel suffocated just thinking about that, you know?
Absolutely.
It's so limiting. And I think another, like, question we just kind of had for ourselves, and then also just people listening in the audience, like, how much of, when you think of your insecurities, right? Mm-hmm. How much of them would not exist if there weren't men looking at you and objectifying you?
It's a great question.
How many more women would you not feel disdain for, dislike for, because they have traits that you feel are better than yours?
Because of the male gaze and because,
like, of you wouldn't hate on women if the male gaze wasn't here.
Right.
Because there'd be no competition.
Right. Because it's like you're fighting to meet the standards of whom? If those standards are eliminated, then that's, you know, the larger question. And again, I think it goes back to this idea of, it's so insidious, patriarchy, the male gaze. It becomes so insidious and pervasive that we, the people who are impacted and affected by it, are perpetuating it. Right? Like, that's what that all comes down to. And so I really hope that just making that clear, making that evident, kind of allows us to do a reevaluation and an assessment of what is our insecurity rooted in? And then how does that impact and reflect back onto other people?
The things you hate about others a lot of times have nothing to do with that person, but everything to do with you.
Absolutely.
And just think of why those feelings, those icky feelings, may arise, and how we can all just shut those things down. Mm-hmm. When you realize it doesn't matter, it's, like, so liberating.
It is. And it's also, like, a reclamation of power, right? Like, if you're letting go of the male gaze and all the implications of what it means to be, like, a woman or whatever that might look like or be, when you shut that all down, you can exist peacefully, right?
Peacefully.
You don't have to worry about nothing, right? But then again, it's hard when people are still upholding those notions around you, because at some point it is going to, like, hit you, right? Like, you are going to be impacted. Mm-hmm. Even if you make that distinct choice, other people aren't doing it around you. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely one of those things that I think it's an individual and both, like, communal effort to fight against this actively.
It is.
Decenter the perspectives of men, get more women into positions of power, so that at least when we turn on our TV, our phone, we're not just impacted by reflections of the male gaze and perceptions of the male gaze. Like, this is both, like, a top down, bottom up effort for change. Like, it literally has to be that.
It has. We really need more women led things, and not to be one of those, like, feminists who's like, girl boss. We need a woman president to drop the bombs. Like, not to be like that at all, but just, like, realistically, we do need more women in positions of power if we want perspectives to shift, just like we need more Black people in positions of power. and not even like maybe governmental power solely, but like the CEOs of companies and like the people running media, like we need more diversity there if we want things to change.
And even you said, like, who's doing this? Who's picking the costumes for different shows or, you know, shows whatever? Like, it literally at every single level.
Mm-hmm. Every level, right.
There needs to be a shift and a change and, like, more equity in that and who's in the room. That's what that really shows. Even in books, right?
Right.
How many romance novels perpetuate all this same stuff?
I was talking about this too the other day, but like even thinking of like how even when a show is diverse, mm-hmm. there's still clear boundaries of how far they're willing to go. Yeah, right?
Absolutely. Like,
and the first thing that came to mind was Bridgerton.
Ah.
They could give you the handsome Black Duke, but they were not ready to make her his counterpart a Black woman.
No.
At all.
Mm-mm.
And even for the next season, they're like, you know, they're giving us a woman of color, obviously, but all the Black people in that show.
I mean, also too, like, I think the fact that he's light skin also kind of feeds into this ideal of like.
He's still kind of closer to white, so.
Right. And I think when you're talking about royalty and like prestige. Having that proximity to whiteness, I think for them was a better sell than like some dark-skinned Black man, right?
But it's just funny because the show's completely based in like fantasy land.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like even in the fantasy land, we're trying to like bend over backwards for like, oh my God, race dynamics.
Yeah, and I think that's also because they would think about how people are like perceiving the show, because obviously also in the show, he's very intimate with that white woman. So I think they felt like it would be a different sell for her to be having all these intimate relationships. Like, if it is going to be a Black man, right? I think they think it's more palatable for it to be, like, a light-skinned Black man. You know what I mean? Who I think has very, like, like, some Eurocentric, like, features. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? In terms of, like...
He's British, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I think that was very intentional. And also, too, just, like... Even the distinction between him and his father, right? Like, in the show.
The evil guy was dark skin. His evil father was dark skin.
Come on now.
But he's the golden child and he's high yellow. Like, what are we doing here? You realize there's so many remnants.
Girl.
Not even remnants, like full-on seeds and plants that have been sown for centuries of racial dynamics, like
absolutely right. I think that's why for them he fit the perfect in between of like pushing some boundaries, but we're not going to take this all the way because we don't want to make people like upset. And even in like creative capacities where you have this like, you know, historical society and blah 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 blah, like you're still governing under these perceptions of like the impacts of colorism, white femininity, protecting that, trying to protect that. And also to like knowing who your audience is, right? I don't think they wrote that show for Black people. Right, like obviously you pulled in Black people because there are Black people in the show, but like you didn't write that for us.
No.
You didn't write that for us.
We might have been consumers of it, but it wasn't any like, this really spoke to me. It was just a show I watched.
And I mean, like, we've said this in our other episode where we talked about, like, colorism in the media with our friend Zoe, but it's also just, like, the over-representation of lighter-skinned Black people in media at large.
Yes!
Like, even throughout that whole show, no dark-skinned Black woman has, like, a predominant lead except his, like, other mother. Like, the other mother of,
and
like...
And she was also kind of mean.
Yeah.
And then the younger Black girl ended up like getting pregnant.
Yeah. So I was just kind of like, all right. Like, of course. Like, yes, let's feed into those common perceptions of like the fast Black girl. Like,
oh my God. Like, okay. Why did Shonda do that to us?
Shonda, baby girl.
Shonda.
Let's talk.
Miss Rhymes.
We love you, but come on.
We need Black female protagonists.
Please,
it's getting a little crazy.
Yeah.
And also, the needle somehow keeps shifting where to check off the diversity box for Black, the people are overwhelmingly light-skinned or mixed.
Yeah.
That is so much erasure occurring.
Absolutely.
Because then, we said this in that episode with Zoe, but like, if all you're seeing when they're saying we have a Black person in the cast is light-skinned people, you're going to start thinking like, that's what Blackness is. Mm-hmm. So then it's like,
and that's the pinnacle of like Blackness, right?
Yeah, like that's, this is the best Blackness has to offer, is these people who are closer to white. So then when you do see a Black person on screen who is darker skin, what's your gut reaction gonna be when you look at them? Like, ooh,
right. And it's then also too healthy. I think especially in films and TV shows about romance, mm-hmm. the fact that dark-skinned women, I have yet to see. And I think maybe in like some older films that like our parents saw, whatever, a little bit more of that. But I think in this most like contemporary period, like not many dark-skinned, if at all, like dark-skinned women who are playing like these protagonists who get romance, right? Who get love, who get to experience all of these things. Like, what does that look like for you to turn on the TV or TV show? You can't find that anywhere.
Or if you see it and it is like a dark-skinned Black woman, they'll pair her up with a white man.
Mm-hmm.
It always feels like there's like a balancing act going on here where they feel like you can't have two Black people because it's too much Blackness.
And I think that elicits a different kind of gaze.
Right? Yeah.
Like, talking about the male gaze, this elicits a whole other kind of gaze as well. That's a whole other kind of gaze that then presents the expectation that, okay, yeah, maybe if I am going to be with a Black girl, like, she should be light-skinned, right?
God.
Or that, like, a Black woman will never have these, like, ideals of, you know, romance and femininity that I'm seeing in all these other people I'm looking at because they're light-skinned or, like, white-passing or, like, whatever it may be. So, again, that elicits a different type of gaze that then presents its own, like, right, that, and you see how that directly would feed into colorism. If that's who we're heralding, yeah. and that's who we're looking up, then automatically that's going to translate into your real life, like interpersonal relationships with like how you're navigating and treating like other light-skinned people in your life or like who you see as desirable in your life. So it's a different kind of gaze, but it's just really interesting, I think, the impact of like media and film and TV.
Very.
And how we operate as a society. And
very.
I think to not be overlooked.
You just have to remember like the media is not innocent. It's mm-hmm. not separate. It's not something that you just consume and you don't think about again. It's going to be in your brain, whether it's conscious or subconscious. So you just have to really be aware of what you're intaking and how that may impact your own biases, insecurities, and perceptions of yourself and others.
That was so well said. That was so well said. And I think this is a longer project and effort that
mm-hmm.
it's going to take a lot, but I think even in just your own individual level and like interactions, like always interrogate why you think the way you're thinking, right?
Yes.
Like you have to do the constant like criticism, the constant interrogation. Like if you feel like, you know, you find yourself like desiring certain people or like shifting to certain people, like ask yourself why that is.
Why?
Like, just, yeah. I think if we just start that at the interpersonal level, that could already just like do so much.
Yeah.
And obviously these are structural, systemic. We need more significant change than just that.
Yeah.
But I think you have to constantly be self-interrogating.
You do. You do. And it's not self-interrogation in any bad way where you have to hate yourself. It's quite literally just like, okay, so why do I think like this? You have to like separate the criticism from yourself. And that's where you can really get somewhere when you are objective with yourself and really like introspective. It's hard, but it's so worth it.
I agree. Completely, completely worth it. But I hope you all enjoyed this episode.
Yes.
It feels so good to be back. And yeah, I hope that everyone's able to just take something from this. And yeah, just thinking about the male gaze and other kinds of gazes.
Yes.
That govern how we think and operate.
I had one last question for you, Kim, if you think you have any little answer to it. But do you have any thoughts on what men could do too? To work against the male gaze? What's their homework for this?
Ooh, I love that question. So get your notepad out. Get the pen and paper. Open the Google Doc. I think, number one, the self-interrogation piece is huge, right? Like, I really, really genuinely and truly think that, especially, I mean, I don't know what it's like to be a man, but like in your interpersonal spaces and then like in the media you consume, I think just constantly questioning like why you're seeing what you're seeing or why people are talking mm-hmm. about the things that they are is super important. I also think that you should be willing to like check people, right? Like if you see that they're perpetuating the male gaze or upholding like problematic perceptions, whether it's like internalized racism, like whatever, I think that you have to be willing to have those conversations.
Yes.
And I really do think that like there are certain conversations and discourse that can probably more easily happen from like between people who share similar identities, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
The conversation that you could have with your bros is gonna be different than like the conversation I could probably have with like men about this, right? Like they're gonna be intaking what I'm saying in a very different way. So I think there's so much power and value in you being able to have that discourse and that open communication with people. Mm-hmm. I also think the fact of the matter is because men dominate so many of these predominant like spaces and structures that we talked about perpetuate this issue. If you are one of those people who gets that position of power, like you need to be bringing in more non-men yes. into whatever space you're in. Yes. I think that is like something you have to task yourself with.
Yes.
Like if you do have access to these structures and these systems, bring other people along with you that don't look like you. Please, I am yes. begging you, because yeah. you have a certain kind of access that you don't. And so I think I always implore the people who have those kinds of privileges, you have to bring in other people because you have access, right? You have that proximity in ways that other people don't. So that is like, that is my homework to you.
Good. I like that a lot. I like that a lot. I was going to add one thing in terms of the self-interrogation. When you're doing self-interrogation, one question I would like you to sit with and sit with yourself free of judgment or anything that you think you should be feeling. Just analyze your thoughts as if they're clouds going by. I would like you to ask yourself, what is your type and why? And sit with that and sit with that. Do your homework.
I love that.
And think about it without some judgment so you can actually get to a good place and unpack some things for yourself. But yeah, I think that's our episode.
Yes, I really hope that you all enjoyed listening and take something away from this. Do your homework. And also, too, if anyone has any questions or they want to talk about this further, our DMs are open. It's actually so incredible to get DMs and like have conversation and discourse about like some of the subtopics that we talk about. So always feel free to hit us up.
It is. And also when we post about the episode dropping, feel free to have discourse in the comments. So everyone yes, can kind of see.
Yes.
So that'd be lovely. We will talk to you next week. Have a great week. Good luck with school. And remember how amazing you are.
Yes. Love you all.
Love you all. Bye.